It's time to put on your sleuthing cap, feel nail-biting dread, and face heart-racing fear. This is Queer Writers of Crime, where you'll get book recommendations and hear interviews with LGBTQ authors of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. Here's your host, Brad Shreve.
Thank you, Alshar, for that lovely new intro. Hi, I am Brad Shreve, and welcome to Queer Writers of Crime. And let's call this a special edition. My guest is Paul Oliver, the founder of crime and mystery fiction publisher Syndicate Books. Paul is going to share with us how he happened to stumble upon a certain novel published in 1970 titled Fade Out by Joseph Hansen. Some of you may be familiar with this novel. Paul will share his reaction to finding it and what happened after that. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. I was given a nudge and was told, hey, you need to go look at this guy over there and see what he did. And it was a wise decision that I followed those instructions because I'm very excited to hear your story. But before we begin, I hope you'll bear with me while I make a special announcement.
I'm all ears.
All right. Okay, this is going to be no surprise for those of you who follow me on Queer Writers of Crime social media accounts or get my author newsletter. It's not been a well-kept secret because I can't keep my mouth shut and neither can I keep my fingertips still. Maybe later I should add a drum roll effect here before I make the announcement. I'll decide later. So here it is, folks. Starting mid-March, Queer Writers of Crime is returning as a weekly podcast. And here's something new. There will be two episodes every week. And that's all I'm going to say for now. If you want more details, hang on until the end of the show, because right now, let's focus on our guest. Paul Oliver is the director of publicity at Soho Press. And as I said at the beginning, he's the publisher of Syndicate Books. And Syndicate seeks to restore out-of-print authors with an eye towards completionism and legacy. His list of authors is impressive, but near and dear to my heart, he's currently releasing the complete Dave Brandstetter Mysteries by the incomparable Joseph Hansen, a pioneering voice in LGBTQ crime fiction and a recipient of two Lambda Literary Awards, and the Private Eye Writers of America Lifetime Achievement Award. Paul, I would like to start with your story of how you came across a copy of Fade Out, Joseph Hansen's first novel, in the Dave Brandstetter series.
It was 2018, September. I was at BoucherCon, right? A great place to find a crime writer.
Tell people what BoucherCon is.
So BoucherCon's existed for decades. It's a wonderful convention. It's for crime fiction, mystery, and kind of its various forms that it takes. And it's a place where fans can come and hear authors on panels, do events, all that kind of thing. And it's also where a lot of the mystery awards are given out. So it's this great kind of gathering point of writers, mystery fans, people involved in television and, you know, and crime storytelling of all kinds. So it's a fun convention. It's in a different city every year. I think last year was the first year in quite some time that didn't attend it.
And I'm very excited about next year because I live in California. Yeah. And I know next year's is in San Diego. So it will be the first time I attend.
Oh, that's really great. It's a really fun convention. The crime and mystery community is, I find, one of the most generous communities out there where, you know, newcomers are always welcomed. And you pull up to the coffee shop or bar and you're standing next to Lee Child and you say, hi, I like your books. And he says, that's great. What are you here for? And you talk to him for a while. It's just neat. You know, it's an interaction you don't get to have at a lot of other things.
So how did you stumble on the book? What happened and what was your reaction?
So I was actually just perusing the used book dealer, and there's a giant book room where, you know, new books of the authors there, they host signings and all that sort of stuff. And I'm a former bookseller. I used to own a bookstore in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania that was new and used, and we had a used and rare component to it. And I always kind of gravitate towards those books. Just, I like the old covers. I like the kind of leafing through that. I was also, you know, with Syndicate, that's one of the things, you know, that is the thing we do, is we try and find these kind of lost books. And I pulled up the hardcover of Fade Out and read the flap copy. Jaw kind of dropped, and I was like, how have I never heard of this? And I just opened it up, read the first page, and was like, okay, I'm going to buy this. And so I actually, that dealer actually had, I think, three or four books kind of throughout the series, and I bought them all on the, you know, just thinking that I would be potentially doing this as a project. And, you know, actually, it's kind of funny. I wound up at the bar afterward, and sitting there, I kind of asked people about them, if anyone knew, and some people, oh, yeah, he wrote a gay detective, didn't he, or something like that? And that was just kind of all it was. And I said, yeah, that's, you know, that seems to be the case. But that was it. It was all kind of hazy. And then I talked to some more knowledgeable people, and then eventually I kind of caught on that I had really just accidentally stumbled on the perfect next project and inhaled Fade Out and went from there. I mean, they're just, it was very clear, you know, by the 10th page that this was a master at work and it was going to be a perfect thing to do.
It's easy to inhale Fade Out. And it is. Whenever I ask authors what books inspire them, at least 50% of the time Fade Out comes out.
Yeah.
At least 50%.
And I think there'll be some new names on that list too, as I'm hoping that as people discover this new edition and give it a read, they're going to realize that someone did it really well before, and that, you know, that there is a shadow that no one was aware of, kind of. But yeah, it's also, you know, the size of Hansen's books, or in the Brandsetters series especially, are, I find, remarkable. They're slim, and he packs a lot into it, and we can talk about that later. But, you know, he does in 173 pages what, man, writers with double that space can never do. Mm-hmm. He gives you a personal life of his protagonists. He gives you, a cleverly plotted mystery, sociopolitical interests. It's just, it's a lot in 173 pages. And for it to have warmth, you know, those short, sprinty writers usually, you know, they're icy, cool stories that are, you know, think like Camus or any number of like these kind of short writers that can do that. And he's not, though. They're warm. There's a warmth and emotionality to the books that is amazing for the page count that he worked with.
Yeah, in a story that short, it would be easy to just be cut and dry, this is what happened, and not get into depth of the individuals and the motives and that sort of thing. So it is impressive.
I'll tell you this, I don't know who, you know, there's not very many better world builders than Joseph Hansen in the mystery, I mean, period, full stop. You know, he does it very well.
So you read it was it four books?
I had, it was kind of an odd collection, you know, and I bought Fade Out, I believe it was The Boy That Was Buried This Morning, Night Work, and Skin Flick were the books that I bought that day. And then after reading Fade Out, I went ahead and ordered the rest of the books because I knew there was a good chance this was going to be the next Syndicate Books project. So then I read them in order from there. It seemed like it was the thing to do. And there was enough writing about Hansen out there. Enough people had, like, occasionally, you know, popped online to write a long form piece about how important he is and where is he on shelves. And so there was just enough of that information out there that I was able to really, it's one of those like galvanizing moments where you're like, yeah, this is the right thing.
You sent me an old public radio interview. I believe it was a public radio station with Hansen. I really enjoyed. It was great to hear him being interviewed.
Richard Walensky just remastered a taped interview he did from 1990 as well. That is on WKPFA out of San Francisco. And that is, I highly recommend that listenership. It is a wonderful piece for crime writers, for crime, you know, fiction fans. It's a wonderful snapshot of the decades that he was writing the series from, you know, an LGBTQ, you know, life standpoint. Like, it's just, it's interesting to see what he went through as an author. And it really lays a lot of that out in that interview. It's a great interview.
Since I can't interview Joseph Hansen myself, unfortunately, I'll put a link in the show notes and you can hear the interview. Obviously, you liked the books because you made the smart decision to make many in this world very happy and republish all 12 novels in the Brandsetter series. What's been released so far and what's coming up?
The first four are out. So that's Fade Out, Death Claims, Troublemaker, and The Man Everybody Was Afraid Of. And those four are out and on shelves, and we'll be doing one a month with Skin Flick up next, coming out once a month, basically until October. Pending some printing issues, you know, there are some very serious supply chain issues going on in the publishing industry right now, and many industries right now. I mean, you can't buy cat food right now, but it's affected glue and paper, all kinds of stuff. So far, so good. But I will tell people that, you know, maybe December on one of them, who knows what happens. But yeah, it's one a month all the way through October, and we're going to do all 12. Same artist designing them. My kind of other half at Syndicate is a guy named Jeff Wong, who's a crime fiction aficionado. He actually has the world's largest private collection of Ross McDonald. He did a book, a bound book of his collection. It's very impressive. Also kind of apropos of working on these, because it's, yeah, one time Hansen was anointed, an heir to McDonald. But yeah, so they have a great uniform look, and I'm proud of what he's put together.
So if you're new to the LGBTQ crime genre, the Dave Brandstetter Mystery Series is an excellent place to start. If you're not new to the subgenre and you haven't read it, shame on you. And if you are a fan of the subgenre and you've read it 1, 2, or 10 times, read it again. Especially with the new covers, they're really cool. Paul, the word groundbreaking is frequently used when describing Joseph Hansen. What makes the Brandstetter series so significant?
Well, obviously, you know, there was, you know, gay crime fiction before Joseph Hansen, and he was a published author before the Dave Brandstetter series, and writing queer fiction of various sorts, some, you know, gothic romance under a female pseudonym, all kind of the things that writers were expected to do to kind of fit into the various niches, the pulps, the kind of, you know, pseudo pornographic publications, that kind of thing. And
I don't think we've told people his first novel, Fade Out. Maybe I did actually in the beginning. It was published in 1970 to give people a perspective.
Yeah, that's a very good point here.
Go ahead.
Michael Nava, who writes the introduction to my edition of Fade Out, and it's a fantastic introduction, you know, very poignantly states, you know, this is, that book is published from a mainstream publisher in the United States at a time when homosexual love was illegal in 49 out of 50 states, you know, the kind of, it's a shocking thing to read and to realize, you know, that this writer was writing something that was essentially like an endangered act, you know, or a dangerous act in some ways.
And we were still mentally ill at that time.
Yeah. I mean, the laws are, I mean, the Great Britain, you know, had obviously there's a long history of how awful the legal situation has been, but that's kind of what he set out to do. You know, it was groundbreaking because here was, you know, he referred to him, he used the term homosexual man is that how, he, you know, he, it was his preferred term, you know, writing an out character who's perfectly well-adjusted in every sort of way. He's a rich, tall, handsome, super competent Korean War vet who has, a World War II vet who has, basically everything going for him except for one thing. And he makes several jokes about that because it's, you know, he makes him a death claims insurance investigator for, you know, insurance companies. And, he did that on purpose because of the long and sordid history of insurance companies denying, you know, the gay community any sort of insurance. If they knew your lifestyle, they could deny claims, deny coverage. So he wanted, you know, he wanted to purposefully make that joke. He made him, you know, perfectly. The only thing he has going, the, you know, only bit of distress he has in his life is a substantial, you know, bit of distress, but it's delivered in a way that's not, you know, it's, he's lost his longtime partner, of two decades. And he's heartbroken and he's dealing with that, but he's dealing with it in a way that's legible to anyone. And it's just that kind of matter of factness of Dave Brandstetter that I think transcends what had come before him maybe. And that's what I think makes it groundbreaking is that he's just there and it's nothing unapologetic, I think people is what people say often. And before that, there were a lot of explanations and apologies being, you know, made in books, even by writers, you know, writing from the community.
Yeah, this was 50 years ago, and we have a gay character who didn't wallow in self-pity, wasn't depressed, wasn't a psycho killer and didn't kill himself at the end. I mean, that's pretty much what, if you were a gay character back then, that's pretty much what your fate was. And it is, this is a mystery. He's an investigator. And hey, you know what? He just happens to be a gay man or homosexual man, as you said. And I can only imagine what he would think of the use of queer today. But it gives you an understanding of Brandstetter's personal life, even though it wasn't the focus of the book. So we get to peer in both of those, which is wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually the thing that, you know, the mystery is excellent. It's classic. It'll scratch that itch. If you're coming from, you know, Marlowe and Spade and Lou Archer, and you're looking for something else. And I mean, Dave will scratch that itch for you big time. He's a West Coast detective in every way. But it's that personal life that makes these books, it's not that it's like amazing that he's gay, right? I'm not saying like that. I'm not saying it's like that. It's like, there's a remarkableness and a groundbreakingness to when he wrote this and what the character's lifestyle is. But I'm just talking, it's just a really in-depth portrayal of a person and his surrounding people that he knows. I'm not that kind of I gotta be honest with you. I'm not the kind of reader that I don't need that feeling of like, oh, I can't wait to be back with the gang, or I wonder what's happening with so-and-so in their private life. That's not the way I read books usually. And I'll enjoy that, but that's not, and this is the first time in a long time, probably since, you know, it's kind of bold, like in my adult life, that I was reading a book and saying, I'm looking forward to the next, you know, martini part in the book where they're hanging out at Max Romano's, the Italian restaurant that features throughout the series. And those scenes are as exciting emotionally and the like portraiture in them is incredible. And I found myself longing to have a martini with Dave. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing, but that's not the kind of reader I am, but I am now, I guess.
That says a lot. And you kind of brought it up. It's not only, I would say, groundbreaking because he's a gay main character. That was an era, and there's going to be exceptions to this, so please don't email me and tell me there's exceptions to this. But as a rule, up until that time period, it was hard-boiled mysteries, tough guys, they drink and womanize, and there were spinsters and that sort of thing. And I am generalizing, but we really didn't start getting into their personal lives until about that time period. And the fact that he was part of that transition and happened to be gay is, to me, what is the icing on the cake.
It really is. And I'd still say that, you know, like, it's not something that's perfectly done today even too, you know, it's, and he did mm-hmm. it at such a high level. You know, I think when there was, in one of his interviews, he mentions, you know, that there was he liked Ross McDonald and Lou Archer, right? And there's actually a lot of similarities between them. You know, Hansen was a poet, and I think McDonald had a keen interest in poetry. And they both write with the language is very pretty, and the use of color and imagery and is all evocative. And there's a similarity there, but it ends with Lou Archer as a cipher. You know, he's a mm-hmm. you know what you're getting with Lou Archer every time. He's on his case. And there's, I love those books, but there's something that Hansen actually, you know, wanted to do here. He was like, you know, where's his private life? Who is Lou Archer? You know, so he wanted to explore the personal life, to take a detective character and explore the personal life as in depth as, you know, the mystery itself. And that's, so they're kind of 50-50 in that sense that there's, you know, I tried to do that in my copy too for the books. I tried to put, you know, that here's the mystery part, and then here's Dave's private life part. Just so you know what's going on, who's the new love in his life, is someone back, who's this, that, the other kind of it, because all that stuff is actually in the end just as exciting as, you know, the mystery in many cases. To be clear, the mysteries are great. I'm trying to upsell the personal life bit more than degrade the mystery.
It has both, yeah. Which is what makes it awesome. Many hold Hansen in high regards, and we talked about, you mentioned to me before that critics really praised his work when it came out, but he struggled. His life didn't reflect on the praise that he was getting. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I think he knew he had done something special, and every single outing it became more of a point of frustration. To be delivering something at that high a level for a mass audience, right? He's not writing avant-garde. This isn't for an audience, a limited audience, and he's an unrealized genius. This is a genius who's writing, you know, for a mass audience and not finding it, right? So he changed publishers a lot. He had, you know, Joan Kahn was his first publisher, and she was a visionary in the mystery community. I mean, she published a lot of firsts. She was a very daring publisher, and, you know, published Inmates and kind of went all around to find different points of view. But even they had a falling out in the end over, you know, performance of the book and you know, plot points and so on. And so he bounced around. Again, Michael Nava, in his introduction, he cites how many TV shows came about from other crime writers that were his peers, Tony Hillerman, et cetera, et cetera. And yet Dave, who is immensely filmable, never had a show, and it's no secret why, right? And yet it is, right? It goes unsaid. And I think that just added up to him having a very frustrating career with, you know, sales. Having to change publishers is never easy, especially when you write your first four books for one publisher and then you write your fifth book for another, and now that publisher only wants to sell that fifth book and doesn't care about the first four and so on. Mm-hmm. And everyone wants you to start over with a standalone and all those things. And he stuck to his guns and he told Dave's story. It must be frustrating. I think you'll hear that in some of the interviews with him. You know, he comes off as warm and funny about it. He has a sense of humor about it to some extent. Mm-hmm. But my day job when I'm not working as publisher syndicate is as a publicist, and I know how he really felt.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. He died in the early 2000s.
Yeah. 2003,
I believe. I don't remember. 2003. Do you think he felt satisfied?
I can't speak to that. I don't know. It seems that, yeah. You know, this is what's weird about these projects. You know, I kind of do, as you said in the beginning, like we try and be complete with our reissuing of an author. And you spend a lot of time with their work and you learn a bit about them along the way. And some of them have, you know, one of my previous reissues, Ted Lewis, author of Get Carter, famous, you know, Michael Caine adaptation of that, was a very difficult person in life and hard to understand, right? Not a lot of biographical detail until very recently. And Margaret Millar, another project worked on, unfortunately later known as the wife of Ross McDonald. But there was a reason why Ken Millar changed his name, because she was bigger. A lot of information about her. She was an MWA grandmaster and so on. Very interesting interior life. But, you know, but with someone like Joseph Hansen, there's details out there, but it's not, you know, you spend a lot of time with the texts. You get what you learn what you can. But I wouldn't dare to speak to his feelings about his career, other than I assume he would have loved to have seen a film adaptation and sales. And, you know, when you read the books, you clearly understand he was a gourmand and like the finer things in life. And I'm sure, you know, a movie deal and some other things would have made that easier to obtain. You know, Dave's always in a nice new car.
I can assure you though, if he was approached to do a movie deal in the 70s, they would want.
Oh, I believe that was the, that was the case. And it's interesting how much, you know, he stuck to his guns across the board. He didn't write the expedient thing or, you know, he maintained his character, maintained the series. And, you know, I think that warmth you hear in his voice and you hear those interviews and kind of the chuckles he gets out of his, he knows what he did. You know, I assume he did. You know, I like to think he knew what he had achieved, because not all artists get that luxury. And it's not like, you know, it wasn't Vincent Van Gogh, you know, like he was well published, just not as successful as, you know, he debuted on the same list included Tony Hillerman. And, you know, Tony Hillerman, excellent writer, gets all the acclaim he deserves. Joe needed some of that too, you know, or all of it as well.
And he got two Lammys. So
he did. He did. Attention. And he, you know, Private Eye Writers of America recognized him, never won an Edgar. Wasn't a grandmaster. And these are like, whatever, there's reasons, right? There's always a reason why it happens, but it's kind of hard not to recognize what the headwind his career faced was, you know? That's tragic. You know, today he's entering, you know, we're reissuing these books into a world that's a lot more interested and having these conversations.
Yes.
And looking at this and being interested in it. You know, there was a review from Book Riot, you know, kind of a big book aggregating website, and they do a lot of reviews. And it's funny, they included it in a roundup of what's new for the Usual Suspects newsletter. And it had all the, you know, kind of the coded language of like what's, you know, assumes a white POV, has statutory included, all the sort of stuff that occurs in the book. And it's kind of it's funny, that language, which when I was reading, I was like, oof, you know, statutory is rough. That sounds so, you know, sounds so bad, but they included it. And no one would have ever included that on a site like that before. And it's because that people are concerned about how we use words and talking about these experiences. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, I was like a defensive parent when I saw that line. Then I was like, well, it's kind of true, whatever. You know, who cares? But that's also the reason why he's getting the attention he is now.
Well, I want to say it's not only great that you republished the books. I love the new covers. They are updated, yet reflect the era. And I didn't actually realize until late last night when I was looking at the new cover of Fade Out that he's standing on the bridge,
yeah.
Which I'm not giving too much away because it's at the very beginning. The story involves a car going off a bridge. So I saw that and it made me chuckle. So.
It's I really, that opening, it's he has all the trappings of, you know, it's raining, you know, hat on the bridge. It's the Arroyo is flooding. It's West Coast noir, right? It's just, it's perfect.
Oh,
totally. You just, and he does it so well. And it, so we had to go there. The artist I work with, his name is Jeff Wong. And, he's a longtime graphic illustrator and does amazing work. He actually did, one of his biggest claims to fame. He did the 50th anniversary of Sports Illustrated, this big gatefold Sistine Chapel of sports. And, so Jeff's really neat. He's also a mystery, you know, lover, huge fan of Ross McDonald. It was fitting when we worked together on Margaret Millar. And then there was kind of this fitting thing here too with Joseph Hansen and his thoughts on, and his Jeff's love of McDonald. But Jeff found an artist that he wanted to kind of evoke. C. Cole Phillips is an American artist and illustrator who did a lot of magazine work and covers and advertisements. And one of the signature kind of things he would do is a very detailed portraiture or illustration and then take a color and pull it through in interesting ways. So we did that, and obviously we wanted to use rainbow imagery and then a grayscale as he ages at the end of it. So we're using kind of a chromatic display also on the books, but you'll see that color use. Jeff was very upset when we were asked by some various accounts to on SkinFlick. Jeff went for it, and we had a bare-bottomed scene on the cover, and they asked us to put underwear on him, and it added a pop of red to the cover that he was, it should all be blue. But it's fun. So Jeff's great to work with. He's an old friend of mine, and if you can't hear the fondness in my voice, it's there. I'm proud of what he did with it.
Now you can hear it. I'm going to step aside to give people an idea of what's coming up with the show, and then wrap some things up with you. So I promised before I end the show, I would explain what you'll hear when Queer Writers of Crime, I can't even say the name of my show, Queer Writers of Crime returns on a regular basis. And here's the deal. There are going to be not one, but two episodes every week. There will be one episode that will be strictly a guest interview. So the show will start and I'll jump in and start talking to somebody. The second episode is going to be shorter. And you guessed it, it will be the book recommendation part of it. Now, these are all going to be the first 3 weeks of every month, a guest and a book recommendation. The book recommendations are going to be a rotating group of individuals that give the book recommendations. Now, some of you may be asking or wondering, what happened to Justine? And here's the deal. Justine and I had a very difficult time getting together because she's very busy and I'm very busy. So when I told her the show is coming back, she said, I can do it once a month. So one of the 3 weeks, it will always be Justine. So if you loved her recommendations, and I know a ton of you did because you let me know, be happy to know she will be back at least 1 week out of every month. Now, for the fourth week of the month, you're just going to have to wait, and that will be a surprise. So it's a little bit different. There's only going to be one episode on the fourth of each month. If you want to go to the blog on the website, I'll give a little more thorough description of what's going on. But really, I wouldn't suggest it, because here's what I think you should do. Whatever app you're on right now, just hit the follow button. And then you don't have to worry about a damn thing. When there's a new episode, boop, there it is. So that's what I suggest you do, and not put up charts on the wall trying to figure out what episodes are when. The other addition is there will now be a weekly Queer Writers of Crime newsletter, and you'll get info about the episodes, plus announcements of new book releases and special promotions. So Greg Herron was kind enough to offer an ebook copy of Bourbon Street Blues, which is the first in his iconic Scott Bradley mystery series. And for a limited time, you can get your copy when you sign up for the newsletter. And so folks know this is the end of February of 2022. It's a limited time. The link is in the show notes, and get your free book and you'll get in the newsletter. Let me take a deep breath. Here's another thing. You likely know Richard Stevenson. He is the author of the Donald Strachey series that started back in 1981 and is still going today. A while back, Richard emailed me because he was excited. And what he was excited about is Amble Press, which Michael Nava is the managing editor, agreed to publish the first of a new Richard Stevenson series. Yes, it is 2022, and Richard is starting a new series. That's pretty amazing. So I was given a copy of Knock Off the Hat, and it met my expectations. So I asked Richard to come back on the show, and he said he had such a great time before that he'd love to come back. So he is going to be one of the guests in March. So here's something for you to do. Go to queerwritersofcrime.com, the website, and on the website in the bottom right corner, there is a little blue microphone. And you have to use the microphone. Don't send me a message. Click on that mic and leave a question for Richard Stevenson. And I will play as many of them on the air, and we'll have Richard answer your questions. And here's an incentive for you to do the microphone. As many of you know, Michael Nava was the second guest on the show back in 2019. He's been back a few times, and he's been a big supporter of this podcast. And he was kind enough to send me a box of copies of signed editions of Lies with Man. So if you leave a message for Richard Stevenson, I will do a drawing, and two people will win a copy of Lies with Man autographed by Michael Nava. So you can't pass that up. However, because of the ridiculous shipping cost, this offer is only within the United States. I apologize. If you live outside the U.S., I haven't discussed it with Michael, but I'm sure he'll send you an ebook. Unfortunately, he can't sign the ebook, but we'll get one to you. So I hope those get you in. And that's it. It was a lot. So if you didn't catch it all, go to the website and go to the blog, and there'll be more details. And Paul, I got to tell you, I just broke one of the big rules in podcasting. I don't know if you know what it is.
I don't know.
It's what we call a call to action at the end of an episode. And you're supposed to stick to one. And I just dumped a ton of them on there. And it's only because I'm excited to bring the show back.
That's a lot. You're doing a lot.
Yes, we are. So I'm going to leave the link also in the show notes to Syndicate Books so they can pull up the website and see the beautiful covers of, and you give a description of the different novels. They can also look at some of the other authors that you have republished as well, because you've got some greats on there as well. I do want to thank you very much for your time. As I said, I'm thrilled that you're bringing back the series, and I am going to start with one and read them all again.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks so much for having me on. This was a pleasure.
It was my pleasure as well.